Good afternoon, and welcome to Lunch with Leaders. I'm Cindy Morgan, and I'm really glad that you're here. So welcome to Lunch with Leaders. Come in, relax, settle in, grab your lunch, turn off Outlook. I'm really hoping you can be very present for this hour. And being present is going to be something that we talk about quite a bit. So again, I'm Cindy Morgan, the Vice President of Learning and Organizational Development, and I'm just thrilled that you're here. I want to make sure everyone knows how to fully participate during today's session. So I'd like to turn it over to our executive producer from the Penn Medicine Academy, Youngin Cho, with a couple of housekeeping items. Youngin?
Thanks, Cindy. Welcome to Lunch with Leaders, and thank you for joining our special edition to celebrate Penn Medicine Experience Week. As usual, we would love the session to be engaging. For those joining us for the first time, please get your cell phones ready for our interactive poll. Share your experiences and comment in chat and ask questions in the Q&A window. We will monitor your input and incorporate into our conversation. So now sit back and enjoy the session. Back to you, Cindy.
Thanks, Youngin. So welcome back for those familiar names that I see in the chat. I'm really thrilled that you came back. For those of you who this is your first time to Lunch with Leaders, I want to give you a big shout out and say welcome. Lunch with Leaders is a safe space where leaders like us can come together and talk about some of the challenges that we're finding during these really interesting times of leading here at Penn Medicine. It's a place where we can connect as well as share and learn from one another through the distribution of practical tips, both from our guests as well as from each of you in the chat window. I'm hoping you like today so much that you'll come back for future episodes of Lunch with Leaders and that you'll actually go and visit the Lead Strong website, where we have a link to all of the 10 shows that we've done to date. I think you can find some pretty interesting things there. Gretchen Kolb has posted the link to make it one-stop shopping, because at PMA, we focus on service too. Thanks, Gretchen. So welcome to today. Before we talk about what we're gonna cover, we're gonna go back to the mailbag and look at the feedback from our last show, which was all around strategic planning during these interesting times. Comments were very positive, so thank you so much to those who reached out and shared your thoughts following the broadcast with us. People really love when Dr. Schuchter was very authentic and she was like, oh, I didn't even think about including the fellows. That's a really good idea. I really like that moment also. Also, we had some really good feedback about people feeling confident that they could use the DIY strategic planning tools, and they thought that the tools were really good. So thanks again for your feedback. I did want to make one show note, and I wanted to give a shout out to Monica Hoyer, who used to work for PMA. She was a guest on a previous Lunch with Leaders and is now the CAO of the Heart and Vascular Service Line. I want to just acknowledge her hard work to helping Lynn Schuchter build her strategic plan. She led the initiative sponsored with Carolyn Houston. So I wanted to just make sure we gave credit where credit was due. So thank you, Mon. All right, so I want to give a quick commercial. I'm thinking I might need to call the Cobalt leaders and see if they can kind of come up with some kind of jingle that we could play on Lunch with Leaders, because I want to plug these tools every single time we do this, because our support systems for our employees and ourselves as leaders is really bolstered through the Cobalt 2.0 resources. So here's just a reminder that Cobalt is there, and you can even be submitting your own content and sign up to host your own personal groups to match your needs. As well, election stress is looming. We've got a couple of more weeks, and it's very high stakes. And so Cobalt is hosting a session with Dr. Thea Gallagher tomorrow. So I wanted you to just know that that is available for you and your teams to take advantage of. So Cobalt. Okay, so let's talk about today's session, because it's going to be really good. So first, let me reiterate happy Penn Medicine Experience Week. Whoop, whoop. Big shout out to PELP members, as well as each of you for quickly pivoting and moving what's typically an in-person series of events over the course of a week to a virtual setting. I don't know about you, but I'm really missing the PMA chair massage that we do for our team every single year. But we're adjusting as well. So I just want to say thank you for making this special, for continuing to honor and recognize how important a great experience is, not just for our patients and our community, but also in terms of how we show up and support one another in each of our jobs. So I want to just say thank you very much. So here are our objectives. First, we're going to talk about what's it like now to provide a great patient experience in the time of COVID. We want to talk about how do we support our care providers and our employees when perhaps a patient displays bad behavior. What about the tools that are available for you and your teams to continue to drive an even better patient experience? So we'll highlight some of those tools and resources that are available to each of you. And maybe one final objective, which isn't on the slides, is maybe by the end of the hour, we'll collectively figure out if we're watching the Eagles tonight or if we're watching the presidential debate. Maybe that's not an objective, but we still have to figure that out today. I love hearing from you. Please feel free to utilize the chat to share your thoughts, your feedback, and any questions that you'd like me to be asking the presenters. I'll try to get to as many as I can, as you know I'm committed to. So last week we had a couple of tech challenges, but this week I think we've got it all figured out. So pull out your cell phones. I got to take your temperature to see how you're doing. So using your cell phone, text Penn Medicine 918 to 22333. You'll receive a response back saying you're now in the survey. If you have a challenge, don't worry. You can put it in the chat and we'll help you. So once you're in the chat, I'm asking the age-old question, what emotions are you feeling today? So take a deep breath, tune in. How are you feeling today? So while you're answering that, I am pumped about our lineup today. I'm a little nervous too, because we've not done five guests. So I'm really getting bold here. We'll see how this goes, but I couldn't not have every single one of these people be on the panel for Penn Medicine Experience Week, because they're pretty awesome. So let me introduce you to them. We have Mike Sella, who's the Chief Operating Officer for the Penn Medicine Medical Group, Penn Primary Care, and Penn Specialty Care. We have Sandy Jost, who is the Chief Nursing Officer at Penn Medicine at Home. We have Dr. Mike Ripchinski, the Chief Clinical Officer at Lancaster. And we have Michelle Volpe, the CEO of Penn Presbyterian Medical Center. We also have my right-hand person, Craig Lowndes, from the Penn Medicine Academy, who is also the AVP of the Penn Medicine Experience. So everyone, welcome. I'm so lucky to have each of you here for this conversation. So let's see how we're feeling today. Let's see what words are popping up. I'll give you another couple of minutes to just tell me how you're feeling. Overwhelmed seems to be the overwhelming word on the chart here today. And Eagles are definitely coming in stronger than the presidential debate on the chat. Oh, we got it. We got our first emoji, youngin. How cool is that? I wish it were smiling, but it's more kind of like a, I guess a, and I don't even know what you call that. Not a smile, not a frown, kind of neutral. Okay, excitement, apprehensive, depressed, stressed, tired, proud, happy, committed, blah. All right, so we're seeing a lot of unsettled. We're seeing kind of a still a mix, a little bit more on the harder emotions front than some of the happier ones. Thank you for sharing that. So before we get to the panel, I'd like to, well, let me start with Craig. Craig, I'm so glad you're here. Thank you. And thanks for all your great work with PELT and with Champion, another Penn Medicine Experience Week. I really appreciate and value your leadership. Can you tell us, get us started? Can you walk us through the Penn Medicine Experience Standards and our focus for this year?
Certainly. Hey, good afternoon, everyone. So back in 2015 was really the first time we started doing a system-wide Penn Medicine Experience Week. And then along the way, we realized we needed a kind of a construct to drive what were our standards. So in the year of 2018, we developed these standards through multiple focus groups around the system. We had two half-day work groups that kind of got down to these five standards. And then we really built a plan so that each year, starting in 2019, we would focus on one standard to really make sure they're socialized well around the system. So last year was compassionate, this year is being present. And I'm going to show you some slides later on that will show you, you know, oddly enough, how the language around being present so fits so well with our year of 2020 and the uncertainty around the pandemic and really just being present for our patients, families, and each other. And we continue. So then if you look at these, we'll go through till 2023 to wrap all this up. So we're excited to continue to talk about being present today.
Thanks so much, Craig. So as we celebrate Penn Medicine Experience Week, we wanted to share a couple of stories from throughout the health system to really get us in the mindset of what a difference you and your teams make to our patients and our communities. Additionally, we just have so many people going above and beyond to provide an even more amazing experience because of all the hardships. So our first story comes from Penn Presbyterian. Michelle, would you mind sharing the story about Kelly?
I would love to, Cindy.
Thanks.
Kelly Becker, registered nurse, has been a bright spot in the medical ICU at Penn Presbyterian for a very long time, but was really a special asset when the unit needed her the most during the COVID surge. She was always there serving as a catalyst for optimism and positivity. It was hard on her when she watched her patients go through intense illness without the support of their families. Her colleagues watched her day in and day out, trying to fill that void by creating a relationship with her patients that many only try to achieve, but Kelly actually achieved. She held so many hands as patients spoke last words to their families by way of electronic communication. This is clearly the type of excellence we should all aim for. Her compassion and enthusiasm has become a legend here in the MICU at Penn Presbyterian. Kelly truly exemplified being present.
Thanks, Michelle. Kelly is a rock star, one of so many that we have here, and it's a really good example of how COVID has brought out the best in so many of our providers and how hard these scenarios are. So let me ask a question to our panelists. How is being present looking different during COVID? And how are you supporting your providers to support the Penn Medicine experience from under their mask and PPE while they're dealing with some of their own feelings about this? Let me, maybe I'll start. Sandy, talk to us. Congratulations on an amazing set of services from Penn Medicine at Home that's really made such a huge difference in our community here across the health system. So big shout out to you and the team. How is being present looking different for the home care team?
Thank you, Cindy, and thank you for your kind words. We are truly really very proud of what our teams have accomplished over the last several weeks and just being able to be such a vital partner to the health system. How has it been different? It sure has, you know, and as I reflected on what we were going to talk about today, what I think I heard from our frontline clinicians and our staff that are in the office interacting with our patients on the phone is that there was something new between our relationship with our patients, and that was frankly COVID. And that took, it embodied itself through the mask and the PPE and the face shields and all those things we had to do to keep one another safe. And also the personal distance that we had to keep, whereas we normally like to sit at the kitchen table and form that relationship and go through meds, that was all different. So frankly, what we've had to do is find a new way of being in that space and creating that trusting relationship. And it hasn't been easy. I'll be honest and say that I think we're just finding our way through it. We've done a lot of listening. Deirdre Francis, our CHRO, has brought tremendous resources to our team to be able to dialogue and support these managers and the staff and how to find new ways of discussing difficult topics. So I'm eager to hear the discussion here today, but it has been different. And I think we are just being able to meet the patients and our staff where they are to be able to create that intimacy.
Thanks, Sandy. I appreciate that. I feel like we're all still learning. Rip, talk to me. How is it for the physicians over at LG? And I'm sorry to hear that you're seeing an uptick in the COVID numbers as well. So safety is so important, and so is the experience. How are you balancing all of this?
Yeah, for sure, Cindy. In fact, you know, I was thinking about this to Sandy's comment there. Think about the mask. Actually, I have my mask here. You got to use what you have during these times. And I think, you know, your eyes are still exposed. So try to accentuate that. You know, I've sort of talked to our teams about, you can use your eye body language just as much. But I think incredibly important, when I see patients in the southern end of the county, I realize I have to speak a little louder too, right? So just being aware of sort of what other senses do we have in place. Everyone's sort of upset that maybe you can't see the smile, and people have gotten creative in their masks, certainly for that end. But if you're wearing a surgical mask, I've certainly told the teams, you know, think about the things you have. You certainly still can hear. You can certainly speak loudly and use your eyes to convey empathy and understanding for the patient's condition.
Thanks, Rip. I've never been more thrilled that I didn't have anything done to my crow's feet, because you can see that I'm actually smiling here. No, what about over at Penn Presbyterian, Michelle?
Yeah, I would say that what I observed and what I heard is that, you know, during the COVID surge with masks and all of that, you know, it was more intense. It was just much more intense. And that, you know, staff, particularly frontline staff, really had to put their fears behind them, you know, so that they could develop a deeper understanding. And I think, Rip, this is a part of what you were talking about, a deeper understanding of what the patient's anxieties were and how they would be able to help them through those anxieties. Because remember, during the surge, we really didn't have visitors. I mean, and we still have limited visitors right now. So our frontline staff was serving and continued to serve multiple purposes, you know, meaning providing the clinical care, but also providing that emotional care. And that became a very big part of the experience, as it still is today.
Thanks. I know how much energy that takes. Let me go to the chat and ask our participants, what differences are you seeing in terms of how your care providers and teams are delivering great experience during COVID? I want to take the question and just twist it a little to say COVID brought on the advance of telemedicine for certain. And so how are you coaching your care providers and staff to be giving great service during a virtual setting like telehealth? Mike, Stella, let me go to you first.
Yeah, I think it's really, you know, whenever we started off with telehealth, it was a little bit clunky, but I think that we worked through kind of those workflows, understanding and kind of recrafting people's roles. The front desk worked a little bit different. Our MAs worked a little bit different. The survey that came out that we released through Press Ganey gave us some information back from the patients to where we were able to really get a clear understanding what the patients were interested in, how they actually enjoyed telemedicine, and then how the providers were able to utilize that information. Liz DeLiener and the work that her team did was pretty incredible with the dashboards that she created, which were able to tell us durations of the video visits, and were able to alter our schedules to improve times in the clinics. For turnaround times to be able to help our providers increase the amount of video visits. And it's just cool tools like that. And I think as the pandemic went on, we got better at utilizing that and creating a better mix for it. The staff, clinical and non-clinical support staff, got more comfortable in their roles. The implementation of Switchboard, I think, was fabulous. The health system did an incredible job with building that and implementing that. I think as we look forward and towards picking a vendor for telemedicine, we're only going to get better at utilizing it.
Thanks. Craig, how's the feedback been about experiences for our patients in the tele world?
So funny, I was just looking through comments this morning as part of another project, and I think some patients really appreciate telemedicine and the convenience that it offers to them. And we still read patient comments. They're saying, geez, I really like seeing my doctor in person. So I think we're still looking for what's that perfect cadence between a televisit and an in-person visit. And some of the comments were saying that you saw both. This could have been done by telehealth. It was a waste of my travel. And some said, I wish I could see my doctor in person. So I think we're still trying to identify what is that sweet spot for our consumers.
Michelle, what do you think, Michelle Volpe? Do you think that telemedicine is here to stay, and is there a place for telemedicine as we even come out of COVID?
I do. Hopefully we will get the support at the federal level so that it can remain. The economics of it clearly are very important. As you've heard from my colleagues here, we've had some very, very positive experiences with telemedicine. And so I do think our patients are looking for this to be a type of service that continues into the future.
Thanks. I like Tara's sorry, Sandy, go ahead.
Cindy, I just wanted to say, you know, we found it to be a really useful tool. We rapidly expanded up to about 900 devices that we had patients on, and we had some patients that were just so afraid. It really enabled us to have a level of hovering that that we could stay in touch. And it also gave the staff some comfort where we otherwise wouldn't have been able to get in there at all. And I would say that our really wonderful field staff, they were just so concerned about these patients and being able to get back in there when we had adequate PPE. So we found, just like Michelle was saying, a mixed bag. And we are hopeful that it'll stay because we really think it's a terrific tool for us to go forward, and we're learning every day how to integrate it into our care protocols. So,
thanks. Mike, Cindy, Richinsky.
Sure. Yes. So I got to add something in here. As a family physician, I'm seeing the best of both worlds of this situation, because certainly during COVID, to Sandy's point, it's a great opportunity to be able to see patients I couldn't see. And so that was, I think, incredibly valuable. But to Michelle's point, I think it's a tool we have to advocate for in the future, because there are people that will want to use it, but I don't think it replaces the longitudinal relationship necessarily, right? It's additive. And you know, there'll be times when I could see a diabetic in 5 minutes and touch base with them on a certain problem. And that's huge value to them, because they didn't have to wait in the waiting room. They didn't have to drive to see me, but we still keep the continuity of care there. So I come biased to this conversation and definitely think it's an amazing opportunity for the long-term.
I would say that we also did some creative things that we didn't anticipate that we were ever going to have to do before. We walked patients and their families through how to change dressings. We walked and we did reteaches on our TPN teaching and things. So necessity is that mother of invention. And so we got pretty creative because we have such smart, great people. So I think it's been a really innovative time. And if we can keep the lessons and then, like Mike's saying, keep that relationship and figure out its place, I think it's just going to be additive.
Thank you, Sandy. The nimbleness of the team throughout the entire system to learn these new skills on the fly, figure some of this stuff out, has been nothing short of remarkable. One age-old thing that we know is that there's a direct link between employees and how they're feeling and how engaged they are in their roles, and the type of experience that they give to their patients and to their colleagues. So I think when employees are engaged, the whole team is working together to create that magic where if they just get it right. Rip, would you mind sharing a story about where LG gets it right and Dr. Justin Roberts?
Sure, he's our lead heart failure physician and happy to share. So Dr. Justin Roberts is compassionate and listens closely to what your medical needs are before recommending treatment. He reviewed my respiratory, blood tests, and CAT scan results with me and explained a plan of care to me. He allowed me to be comfortable enough to have a discussion with him about end-of-life care. This is a doctor I have only seen face-to-face about 3 to 4 times. The entire office gets it right, from security, transport guard, the nurses, nurse aides, and the scheduling folks from this patient's point of view. The greeter, reception people were wonderful, seeing a need for assistance due to my shortness of breath by getting me a wheelchair. The person that transported me to the next area could not have been more helpful, telling me to ask for him, and he will assist me to my car when I was done. Every encounter with a different person was great, making me feel as if I was part of their family. This helped me relax enough to open up to the doctor about my end-of-life concerns. Any of these folks have an extremely difficult job under pre-COVID. I have worked in healthcare for many years, most recently in hospice care. What I experienced on the visit was close to a miracle. It was a beautiful thing. Pretty
Thanks,
awesome.
Rick. Yeah, really great. big shout out to Justin Roberts and the whole LG team in that area. So that really underscores how deep a connection can go when people really choose to show up and be fully present. So how have you seen employee engagement impact patient experience? And what are you doing as leaders to help drive engagement on your teams? Let's start with Mike Sella.
Yeah, so I will say that as a health system, we build some beautiful facilities out there, but those facilities are just facilities. It's the people of Penn Medicine that really make Penn Medicine a special place. And I've always said that without our employees, that we really wouldn't be anything. So it's the employees that drive our patient experience. And I think if we don't provide our employees with the necessary tools, you know, all the way down to our frontline staff, we're not going to be successful. So making sure that the frontline staff, all the way, whether it's EVS or whether it's our people in the access center, our patient service representatives, our MAs, have the necessary tools to do their job. They have the training. It's similar to physicians. Physicians, you know, they want to be able to practice at the top of their scope. We want all of our employees, clinical and non-clinical support staff, to practice at the top of their scope. So we've created training programs. We've worked to make sure that all of our staff and our clinics are working towards practicing up at the top of their scope. Our clinics are staffed in appropriate ways, so that we can offboard work off of our physicians to our APPs, from our APPs to our RNs and our LPNs, and ensure that we have the proper training and protocols in place. So just putting programs together like that, also just getting back to basics. So the work that Craig did way back in 2007 with the ADIT model, doing secret shopping and in our clinics and taking a look at, you know, what our staff are doing in regards to the ADIT, and making sure that we're reminding folks of that model and bringing them back in for training and retraining staff is really important. So I think it's just reminding the health system offers so much out there in terms of resources and training, and just reminding all of our managers and all of our employees that those resources are out there, I think is really important too. So organizing that information and getting that out there.
Thanks, Sella. I appreciate that. And PMA has a ton of resources, and you know we're always here to support you and your teams. So let me ask you in the chat, what are you doing to drive engagement with your employees, and what tips can you share with our panelists and with each other? I want to turn it back to Rip. Rip, in the comments, a few comments said that the way Dr. Roberts showed up for that patient should be how we're showing up for every patient. And I'm hoping that's more the norm in everyday behaviors at LG. What are you and the other leaders at LG doing to support great patient experience and employee engagement kind of as the kind of the things that go together?
Yeah, actually, I was reflecting on where we started today's session with the word cloud, Cindy, about feeling overwhelmed. And thinking about myself when I have a really overwhelmed day and I'm managing everything, and then all of a sudden there's a patient in front of me. And that dichotomy of trying to really understand, what do we do there? And a lot of people coin it as on stage, off stage. I don't think of it like a dichotomy like that, right? Because I'm carrying those things in the room with the patient. But what I try to tune in for is those things that really matter to them at that time, right? I might have a long list of things we want to do in the office, or an inpatient nurse may have a long list of things that have to get done today from education standpoint, but watching for those moments to create a connection, and that's what Dr. Roberts' story sort of meant to me. Like, each one of those people had a role to play, and they looked for an opportunity to make that connection with the patient. And even if the connection doesn't actually solve their problem, the point was you made the connection, and that's what I think is very valuable. And we try to really encourage that, sort of, you know, take a second and pause and try to understand where is the patient coming from in a lot of our interactions.
I think that's a really nice segue, Rip. You know, it is really a challenging time. We saw those emotions come up, and they come up, you know, session after session, overwhelmed, stressed, anxious. It's really normal during this time, and let's just revisit these words with a full a composite from you: frustrated, blah, weary. So we know that it's not just each of us as leaders who are feeling these types of emotions. We know our staff is feeling this way at times, no doubt. And no doubt our patients and their families are struggling as well. They have jobs, maybe they're working from home, maybe they don't have a job, and they could be feeling the exact same way. And sometimes we talked to Fran Johnston several weeks back around emotional regulation and how important it is to really do a check-in with yourself to say, how am I feeling? So you can, like Dr. Rybczynski, you know, say, oh my gosh, now I have to go deal with my colleague, deal with a patient. I've got to really kind of come out of this emotion to give my best, to be present and give great service. And we know how hard that is. We've talked about that on the show, and we talk about it as leaders with one another. Sometimes our patients, especially when they're not feeling well, maybe they don't have the self-regulation or the skills to self-manage. And at times people can really act out on our care providers and our staff. You know, and we saw some of that with visitor restrictions, and people are more and more lonely. So let me go to the panel, and I want to start with Sandy. How do you support your staff when a patient really acts poorly? We're hearing stories of this more and more.
Yeah, thank you for bringing this up. And I do think that in our setting, our experience was just a little different, because we, while the hospitals rightly so ended up restricting visiting, we actually are in the patient's home. And so now with everyone on quarantine, we were actually going into situations where there were actually even more people in the home. So we really had to recognize that. And, you know, we really focused as a leadership team with the support of, you know, Joan and our entire leadership team that, you know, from a philosophical perspective, you know, I always hail from, you know, people have to have their basic needs met, right? Your Maslow's basic hierarchy of needs. And so for our staff, that meant really getting around that PPE and around the essential education, much like what Michael already said, and made sure they had it and made sure they knew it wasn't going to be sitting on a shelf. If we needed it, we were going to get it to them when we created these logistics scenarios so that they felt at least safe and they felt like they weren't being super spreaders, and then they could take care of the patients. And then from a perspective, you know, we had to just work with our staff to help them to understand that stress brings out a lot of different things, and it wasn't personal. And so we just held, with the great support of our wonderful psychosocial team, a lot of debriefing sessions where they were just able to talk it through and process that and realize these are challenging times for everybody. And frankly, you know, we just had to figure out, what were we going to react to? How are we going to help them? And kind of take each individual situation as it came, because it's just during chaos, it's hard to make rules that are going to fit one size fit all. So we really took it down to the individual.
Thanks, Sandy. And Patty is supporting that statement on the chat by saying we really need to understand what's driving some of that behavior so you can fix it at the root. Michelle Volpe, are you seeing this as well at Penn Presbyterian? And how are you and your team supporting your care providers and staff when this happens?
Yeah, this is a serious issue. It's a serious issue here at Presbyterian. It's a serious issue across the country. It's a serious issue across our region. Colleagues of mine in other health systems talk about this all the time over the past several years, and even more recently, seeing it increase and increase and increase in terms of the number of patients that are mistreating their care providers, which I personally can't understand, you know, unless there's some type of a mental health or whatever issue. So what are the kinds of things? I put them in a couple of buckets. One are kind of like I call the technical things, like safety net. These events are reported on safety net so that we can review them, we can delve into them, we can see what we can do about them. The second thing is we put some flags up. Now, where we've been able to put flags up in our Epic system is in the emergency department. And, you know, we're looking at how we can expand that into other areas. A flag is more proactive, meaning that if there's been a similar experience before, patient comes back, gives staff a heads up. And so not that there's a lot of preparation time, but try not to have folks, taken off guard and get support. Then I'll move to the bucket. There are many others. Then I'll move to the bucket of emotional support, which I think is critical. We've got to make our staff feel secure. So obviously, secure in terms of having the right security. And that is, at least for us here, something that changes by hour. And we're constantly evaluating. You know, we've increased security support over the last 2 years, and we need to do more. We absolutely need to do more. But also, when an event happens, rallying around the individual. We just had something happen last week, and the staff person, the frontline staff person, just handled it so beautifully. I don't know that I would have been able to do it. And immediately, not only team members, but members of the administrative team rallied around this individual, one, to make this individual known that this is unacceptable behavior, that we are working as hard as we can to come up with solutions, and helping him psychologically get through the incident.
Thanks, Michelle. I love how serious you and your team are taking this. And I know that many leadership teams, if not all, are taking this just as seriously throughout the health system. So thank you for your leadership. I want to pivot and talk a little bit about building an inclusive environment and really honoring the diversity of our patient population and the communities in which we're operating in. Obviously, this is what we're striving for. We always have. We're doing it even more than ever with a greater focus. And I'm so grateful for Dean Jameson, Kevin Mahoney, as well as the leadership of Dr. Eve Higginbotham and Dwayne Duckett from Human Resources, who are champions of our cultural transformation work that's underway. You'll hear more about that. I want to talk to Craig, though, and say, how are we ensuring that diversity is front and center with the Penn Medicine experience? Can you give us an update on what you're thinking about?
Sure. And thank this slide tells the story. So as you know, we have these Penn Medicine Experience standards, and they also, we framed those originally around the Blueprint for Quality. And currently, we have a work group that's being led by Jeff Milstein from PMMG, Sonia Wood from GSPP, and Sue Smith from Presbyterian. And we are having this really awesome work happening between the Center for Health Equity and PELT to figure out how do we best align the Penn Medicine Experience standards so that there is a shared message around healthcare equity. So it's been really, it's been one of the most fun things we've done. It's also very eye-opening, and we have done multiple groups that have kind of dug in deeper, and we're looking at how do we then build out language that will clearly indicate our stance around health equity and eliminating disparities in care.
Thanks, Craig. So I want to turn to the next story, who saw a patient who was deprived of the basic human needs, and this care provider went above and beyond to address an issue right away. Sandy, would you mind sharing this story of Anna?
Absolutely. Thank you, Cindy. Yeah, this is a story that actually came my way from one of the home health team managers, because she was just so proud of her team, and so am I. And Anna, an RN, and Natalia Cerulnik, she's a physical therapist, both on our home health team four, who serves a wide area, but one of our underserved areas, North Philly, met a young man, 20-year-old young man, who had reason to be on hip precaution. And when they both arrived to start his care, they found that in this mostly empty apartment that he and his mom were basically sleeping on the floor and devoid of basic necessities. And they were very concerned because of the recent surgery he had on his hip that would cause damage and undo the surgery. So Natalia was immediately concerned for the risk of breaking his hip and compromising his hip precautions, and put out a message on social media to see if anyone could donate a mattress and a bed frame or sell her one cheaply. And by the end of the day, she managed to obtain a bed frame and a mattress and then got it delivered to that patient's home so that he could be safe. And Anna, a colleague, was so impressed that she brought this story forward, and we were so glad she did. And in this time when our staff, like all of you and all of your areas, are incredibly busy, our staff are just been so busy in the post sort of COVID catch up. It would have been so easy for these two to say, oh my gosh, this is just one of these needs where it's so hard to overcome these needs. But instead, I mean, the example of truly just engaging and working this through, we couldn't be prouder. And I will just say that so many of these types of stories come my way. This is just one example. And thank you for getting to share it, Cindy.
Yeah, big shout out to both Anna and Natalia, who continue to go above and beyond, as so many of our care providers do. These are just illustrative stories of what's happening every single day here across all of Penn Medicine, no matter what environment they're in. So let me turn to our panel, and I'd love to turn to you in the chat as well to say, how are you building a diverse and inclusive environment for every patient and employee? Let me start with Mike Sella. What are you doing out in PMMC?
Yeah, so primary care, especially in primary care, it has been going on, but I think is about to take off even more so now with Matt Press, the primary care service line, really taking a look at organizing our primary care into regions. We're really working with the primary care service line with the wraparound services, diving into social determinants of health, really focusing on those services that really weren't provided to underserved minorities before. I think that our practices, because of the regions that we serve, were widely dispersed and were ripe for being able to provide the necessary care to those underserved populations. We're in the right geographic areas. I think that the way that we're going to be able to organize and focus with Matt's vision of how to deliver primary care is about to take off and be able to provide that sort of service.
Thanks, Mike. Michelle, having Penn Presbyterian in the heart of West Philadelphia, diversity and inclusion has been on your agenda and your team's agenda for a long time. What are the things that you're continuing to do to build a diverse and inclusive environment for our patients and staff?
Yeah, and the way I would respond to that, Cindy, is that you use the word continuing to do. I believe we're actually at the very beginning of doing some new things, and I'll tell you why. What I have found, what we have been doing, and what I have found as being essential is listening. The experience that what I've learned from many staff members here at Presbyterian is that my experiences as Michelle Volpe throughout the year have been just that, my experiences. And that it is absolutely critical that I learn and understand what the experiences are of others, particularly those who come from a diverse background. And so we here at Presbyterian have been listening. We've been listening through town halls. We've been listening through our diversity committee, which has been organized for a number of years, but listening in a very, very different way. And there are a number of other forums that we have been on this listening path. Combining that with data, with information that we have through our community needs assessment. And I know at Lancaster General, you guys are just doing a stellar job, with work with your communities. But better understanding through not only the data, but the eyes of the individuals in the community as to what their needs are and how to address those needs. So, you know, that's not something that is going to be finished in 30 days, 60 days, or 90 days. It's going to take a fair amount of time. What we've done here at Presbyterian, as we are putting together our work plan, we work within pillars. You know, we have, you know, pillars, financial pillars, you know, people pillars, whatever. We've actually added a pillar for diversity because we do feel the work is significant. It's going to take a very long time. And that we need dedicated thinking and we need dedicated action plans, you know, around this area.
Thank you. How about you, Rip? What's happening at LG in terms of work to create a more diverse and inclusive environment?
Sure, Cindy. So I would agree with Michelle. This is a longitudinal journey, not only previous to this point, but obviously moving forward. I mean, if you think about Lancaster County, for people that have known it, you know, when I came here 20 years ago, my wife and I experienced the transplant effect. Even though I'm from Delaware County originally, right outside of Philadelphia, I still was not from Lancaster County. So there was either the group that you live and born in Lancaster County and you stayed here forever, or you were a transplant. And that feeling, it's funny, you know, as I reflect on that back 20 years, sort of where we are now and trying to appreciate, I think, where Michelle was going, building the awareness of both health equity and diversity and people's lack of awareness, frankly, of where we are as a community. And I feel like as a leader, how do I not only build that awareness, but also create knowledge, right? Create a space where people can learn about what those differences are and why it doesn't matter. And I think that that's sort of like this new trajectory that we're now on as a result of recent events. It's actually pretty exciting because it's work, to be frank, you know, we just weren't doing here. And with our diversity and inclusion committee now formed and beginning to take on some of the tasks of looking at that survey data, looking at the data and try to begin to drive some actions. It's been really, it's been an interesting journey and I'm thankful because I think about it as really, we really care for over 500,000 people in the county and it's our obligation to do that. It's our mission, frankly.
Thanks. I too also feel very optimistic. The outpouring of support and energy and momentum for wanting to drive change that's deep and at the core. I think I've never felt it be more present than now. And we'll hear much more and we're going to dedicate a lunch with leaders in January to this topic. So I hope you'll all tune in. I love Kelly from the chat saying she's educating herself individually and then collectively we're educating ourselves as well. So we've got to just keep this front and top of mind. Mike Stella.
Yeah, I only answered 50% of your question, and if I don't throw this in here, I know about it afterwards. So the other part was, what are we doing for the employees? So Dr. Amy Ando is our Director of Diversity and Inclusion. And of course, we have the unconscious bias training. And like Michelle said, it's a lot of the listening, the data gathering, working with groups on the feedback, and then the Committee on Anti-Racism and Organizational Justice. That we have going to. So Amy Ando is running that for our PMMG, Penn Primary Care and Penn Specialty Practices too.
Thanks. We're collecting data through the Actions for Cultural Transformation and it's been really amazing. We've talked to thousands of employees thanks to the efforts of volunteers across the organization who've sent us the results of their conversations. So you'll hear more about that in January. Again, Dr. Eve Higginbotham and Dwayne Duckett are leading that work with some support from the Office of Inclusion and Diversity and PMA. So we'll have much more to share and make sure it's aligned with some of the things you're doing locally as well. Michelle, did I see your hand? Go ahead.
Yeah, I also believe that we need to give our staff members, our employees, permission to speak up. It's just critical. And, I always thought we kind of did that. But I've learned over the last few months that that was not necessarily the case. And so we as leaders need to be conscious about encouraging our staff members to speak up, particularly those, again, who come from diverse backgrounds.
Thanks, Michelle. We set the tone from a leadership perspective on that. Sandy, you wanted to add a comment.
Yeah, I just wanted to echo and endorse what Michelle has shared. I want to give a big shout out to our Community Health Worker Impact Program. I think programs like that, and there are probably many across our health system with individuals who have a lot of knowledge and a lot of experience and how they can inform this journey, and they have tremendous relationships with patients. And so I agree, and I think that if we give the right forums and we think about our structure and we think about how they can serve as mentors, even to all of leaders, and I think a lot of good can come out of that knowledge that's right there.
Thank you.
I agree completely.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't raise my hand. I was just going to say
My fault.
Being able to create that comfortable space to have that sometimes awkward conversation and having people be all right with that and to drive that forward. So.
Thank you. At this point, let me implore you, if you have not taken unconscious bias training, you're overdue, and we'd like to invite you to go to KnowledgeLink ASAP and sign up for your unconscious bias training. Our goal is to get every single one of our leaders in our population trained on unconscious bias as quickly as possible. In the next couple of weeks, we'll be launching unconscious bias training for our entire Penn Medicine population. So as leaders, we want to make sure we're educating ourselves first so we can then in turn create a supportive and conducive environment for these types of ongoing conversations. Because now diversity and inclusion, it's just so important to the Penn Medicine experience more so than ever before. And it starts with us and the type of environment we're creating. So go to KnowledgeLink, register for your training, ensure that 100% of your team gets the training as well, because that's going to shape our conversation about the Penn Medicine experience today and for years to come. So thank you, leaders, for your support of this exciting work. Craig, leading the patient experience and driving improvements in PRESS-GANI scores and other types of scores, and it's hard. It's hard work for leaders, and we set the tone as leaders. It's not easy, but can you remind all of our guests today and participants about the tools and resources that PMA and the PELT has created and are available to help make their jobs just a little bit easier?
Absolutely, and so I'll show you the next couple of slides around our campaigns. The one thing to keep in mind is, I think the part that I love about this work is that it runs from Lancaster to Princeton and everywhere in between. And this was really kind of the first time we've taken a system-wide messaging campaign that would apply to all locations. And I recall being in Chester County for a meeting with Mike Duncan and just drawing a map of all our locations where this would make sense. So you'll see here, these are available on our Penn Medicine Experience website, which is through the internet. One is a pre-populated huddle sheet, which gives you more ideas around kind of being present. And then the second version is one you can see, actually, you can build in your own content. So it has, the second page includes some resources around being present. But for a manager who would like to have a huddle around being present, and it doesn't have to be limited to this week. You can do it next week. So don't worry about doing this tomorrow. It gives you really a nice foundational part and kind of the structure around what does it mean to be present. If you go to the next slide, thanks. So the part that I think is just so interesting is that this language around, we build what we call key messages. So what does it mean to be present? And for some folks thought it meant like just putting down my cell phone. And we developed these in 2019, never knowing that there would be a pandemic coming in 2020. But if you look at these slides, it fits so well with the work we've talked about today, which is just really, how do you increase the sense of belonging? How do you reduce isolation? And how do you really have your focus on that? So our first story we heard that Michelle shared about Kelly, wasn't she just being present in that conversation? So it's really, these are what we guide our overall campaigns around. So you've seen, we have many more digital campaigns happening this year than in person, but we still also have posters around the system that feature employees. We'll have a wrap-up poster next week that will feature one of our nurses from our Abramson Cancer Center, all around kind of how do you be present. And to the next slide then, thanks, Kay. So These are just kind of some highlights of how entities have embraced pen medicine experience as well as increased employee engagement. On the left side, you'll see a really straightforward and simple campaign at Penn Presbyterian in which they were taking Polaroids. Imagine that, old-fashioned Polaroids, and people were writing down about how they were showing up and being present, about their own story, and then built a bulletin board around that. In the middle is a story from our LG colleagues that they promoted on social media, highlighting staff members around being present. Again, looking at what are those day-to-day behaviors. And on the right, if you've not seen this yet, you can always go to YouTube and find it. This is Stanley Gantz. Stanley is a member of the LGH EBS team. He was highlighted in our Penn Medicine Difference Makers campaign that was appearing on social media. And as luck would have it, people scour these things. The Jimmy Kimmel Show found his story. He sings, and he's known as being the great connector through singing at LG. And he was featured as the healthcare hero of the week on the Jimmy Kimmel Show probably about 3 months or so ago during the pandemic. You can just Google Stanley LGH and Jimmy Kimmel, and you'll see his nice story that was filmed at LG. And just really a highlight, and LG was thrilled to have him there. It's funny how people look at our media and make things move. So we highlight also on social media. So hopefully you'll see these are the ways that as a manager, I would just say, share the standards, talk about being present, and create a connection for your team in terms of what is being present and their day-to-day work. Back to you, Cindy.
Thanks, Craig. Really appreciate your work. Got to give a shout out to Debbie Foster, Dinah Schuster, and the entire internal communications team who helps us with our social media campaign, as well as all of the Penn Medicine Experience Week collateral. Thank you, team. So let me just say thank you so much to our guests today, Rip, Stella, Michelle, Sandy, Craig, and thank you for a great discussion on some really hard, challenging topics. Let me give you a preview for the week ahead. For November 5th, mark your calendars. There's never been a moment when I talk to leaders that have said, oh, I know everything there is to know about financial acumen, except maybe if you're in finance. So this is the show you've also been waiting for. Financial Acumen at Penn Medicine, and I've got a great lineup. Keith Casper, our SVP and CFO for the health system, will join us, along with Regina Cunningham, who's the CEO of HUP, and Beth Johnston, who's been working on special projects, and the Penn Medicine Academy is lucky enough to have Beth joining our team. She's helping us build a curriculum all around financial acumen at Penn Medicine, and so she'll join us as our PMA subject matter expert. So I'm very excited for next Lunch with Leaders, and I hope you'll join us. We have been working fast and furious behind the scenes. Youngin, Gretchen, Jen Rader, and I have been like putting our heads together to come up with a great lineup. So you keep coming back and tuning in, and I hope you'll tell your friends. So here's a couple of topics that we have. We're going to focus on attitude of gratitude right around Thanksgiving and recognizing and rewarding your team. We heard a lot of feedback about how do we onboard people in a virtual way. So we'll have that in December. We'll have a year in review for the closeout of Lunch with Leaders 2020. And then we kick it back off in 2021 with an interview with Kevin Mahoney. I'm practicing in the mirror already. This is like a dream come true. So, and then we'll have the great work on the roadmap in January, and then the update on the blueprint in February. So please download the tool, download the calendar invite so you hold the time, tell your colleagues. We love hearing from you. Thanks for coming. Happy Penn Medicine Experience Week. Thank you for your service and for leading teams that provide great service. We're stronger together, pandemic, no pandemic. We're just so grateful for all that you're doing. Thanks for tuning in. I love hearing from you. Let us know how we can improve the show, what topics you'd like to see. Don't forget to close out of the survey, and we'll be posting a survey to the chat. So if you want to give us feedback, you could either send us an email, fill out the survey. We love hearing from you. Thanks so much for all that you're doing, and happy Penn Medicine Experience.